Well, it's a match made in heaven. Now, their love story has been seen around the world.
I, Beecher, take you, April.
I, April, take you, Beecher.
I vow to love and honor you.
Promise to remain by your side.
I do.
I do.
This is the story of how a seemingly perfect Christian couple went against evangelical culture to embrace their authentic selves and found a healthier marriage in the process.
This is the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. My name is Beecher.
And I'm April.
And we greatly underestimated how long this podcast would go.
Yes.
I think initially we were like, oh, we'll talk about this episode, which is all about the pandemic. And then we're like, oh, shoot, there's a ton of stuff in here. Because I think what we realized is through all the messages that we've been getting, which thank you for those. It's been amazing to hear your stories. But we realized that I think like what we're about to get into is the crux of what like so many people are asking, which is how did we get from the place where we left off last episode, where it's this thing that's no longer a demon, no longer an addiction, but this thing that Beecher does that bothers April.
It's Beecher's thing.
It's Beecher's thing that bothers April, and our marriage is not in a healthy place. And how do we go from there to where we are today, which all of that really takes place in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be pretty detailed through this section because, like I said, so many of the questions that we've been getting directly deal with this season, because I think this is the rare. I mean, honestly, you making the jump like you did, April, as a partner in this was so huge that I want to spend time and really talk about this. And hopefully through our stories, you know, some people could be helped out there.
Because at the beginning of the pandemic, we were still both. We would have told you that we were both cisgender, heterosexual, straight, evangelicals.
I mean, we still went to church every Sunday. Mm-hmm. I worked at a Christian school.
I was on the worship team church.
We were very much still doing life. We were exploring some, mm-hmm. letting me wear some pink socks every once in a while, or, you know, wear a dress every 4 or 5 weeks. It was very small things, but we were trying to learn how to live with it. Mm-hmm. But besides that, we were very much still in the Christian kind of circles.
Yeah.
And then the world broke.
Yeah. We drove to Texas to visit my brothers and sister-in-law. And on the way, well, our van broke down. But yeah, that doesn't really matter. Gosh. That's its own story. But we did make it. And while we were there, it was like March of 2020. It was like the second week of March. While we were there was when the baseball shut down and basketball shut down.
We were watching a basketball game all discussing, how big you think this COVID thing is? And they're like, the NBA is canceled. And we're like, whoa. And then the school that I worked at was like, hey, take an extra week from spring break and then mm-hmm. take an extra forever. I mean, it went very quickly. I think our generation, everyone that lived through it forever will be like, where were you when the world broke because of COVID? Yeah. And so we could spend 30 minutes on that. But in general, what the pandemic did is it took all of these societal influences that told us that we're the great Christian couple, that I'm a, you know, strong head of the household from the church and a professor that everyone looks up to. It took all of that away. And now I'm working from home. I'm Zooming. I'm seeing April and my kids and my parents or April's mom every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, though, people thought you were head of household, but we didn't adhere to that.
You're right, but I'm telling you, I was going to church and hearing that.
That's true.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be, even though...
Right. Even before all this, I just want the people to know we were equal partners.
Yes, yeah. No, I didn't buy into that aspect, but it's still culture that was telling me things. True. And so, yeah, I'm working from home, and all of these kind of things were stripped from me, so...
Yeah, something kind of funny that happened is, so during this time, obviously, Trump is president still, and I talked a little bit, in a recent episode, of how that really rocked my world, and so I was already kind of uncomfortable going to church and would leave angry many times, and was starting to feel a little bit like a hypocrite on stage when I would either play keys or lead worship, because... Like, I had a really hard time worshiping alongside really big Trump supporters because I could not reconcile that we were worshiping the same Jesus, that we could read the words of Jesus and come away with two completely different ideas of what it meant to be a follower of Christ. So, 2 weeks before the pandemic happened, I actually was like, Beecher, I just can't do this anymore. I just can't do it. Like, we were still going to church, but I was like, I cannot be on the worship team anymore. So I actually emailed our worship pastor and resigned my position and just said, like, you know, whatever excuse I came up with. But literally, if I just would have waited 2 weeks, the pandemic would have taken care of it for me.
It's true.
Because I will say, at least our church, they did try to, you know, treat the pandemic well, which, oh my gosh, we didn't even add that in our list, how Christians treated COVID.
That feels like a rabbit trail. So, yeah, we're going to go.
Also, like, accelerated the deconstruction, but I digress.
It did, yes. But, so, we no longer have church. I no longer have a job I'm going into for, and we're just around the house and looking at each other a lot. And, of course, because we've already set up that our marriage was in an unhealthy place, I want to talk about the feminine stuff all the time. And April wants to do things to avoid talking about it. And so now we are around each other constantly and there's less room for avoidance. Mm-hmm. And so everything rapidly sped up when the pandemic hit.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the first thing that was kind of a big marker was my birthday, which is in April. And so this is a month after we've been in the house a month. And for my 30th birthday, April, I mean, you thought you might do a surprise party or this, that, and the other. And then now that the world's broken, mm-hmm. you were like, okay.
Which I did get a bunch of your friends to send in videos.
Yes. And that was super sweet.
Yeah.
But April was, I guess your thought was, what was your thought? That you wanted to make it exciting and fun for me because it's my 30th birthday and you knew what I really wanted to do?
Yeah. I think at this point, I'm trying to be more supportive, even though I was internally struggling. So I told Beecher, like, for their 30th birthday that they could go full femme, wear a dress, put on the little fake boobs, do a full face of makeup, whatever their little heart desired. They had full reign of my closet. And
I think we almost sped up the timeline a little bit because in last episode we talked about green light nights, which we were integrating things, but I think this was really the first green light night, which was mm-hmm. April giving me the green light to go full feminine. I mean, I had boots, leggings, a top. I did a full face of makeup, had no idea what I was doing for makeup wise because at this point you gave me the freedom, but you didn't want to be involved. And so I'm in there like, oh, I've got pictures. So I took pictures that night. And it was so, I loved it. I look back at the pictures and I can immediately go back to the emotions I felt because seeing myself in the mirror with everything on that I want to possibly have on, I felt euphoric, excited, but also ashamed because I still had a boy haircut and still looked mm-hmm. like a boy in makeup in my head that's.
Well, you wouldn't even take the pictures on your phone.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I was. But I wanted to take pictures because I wanted to remember it and I wanted to look at myself.
DSLR camera.
I got the DSLR camera. But and of course, I'm like taking it like in the mirror of myself. And I actually posted, if you go to my TikTok I posted on my birthday last week. Go to my TikTok. You'll see a picture from that night. But I just look at it and I immediately feel so vulnerable and ashamed, but also excited. It was like this wild range of emotions. And April pretty much stayed away, but I did at the end of the night want to show you. Yes. And I remember being like, April, can I show you? And you're like, okay.
I was like, okay.
Okay. And so I walk around the corner and April, you are like, yeah.
I'm sure I complimented something.
You found like, something to compliment.
Yeah. I was definitely internally having a hard time with it. And you know, it was constantly, which later on I dig into like where my uncomfortability was. But yeah. And then you asked me, I took a couple pictures for you.
You did. And I remember you were like grimacing, but I could tell everything in your being was trying not to grimace.
I was trying so hard to be supportive.
Right. But it's so you took pictures like, yeah. Because you were the one that initiated this idea for green light night and going full femme. And so you didn't want to be, you couldn't be mad at me or frustrated because mm-hmm. I was doing it, but you were definitely having a hard time with it. And so after that, I remember it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm processing all of this. Of course, I'm teaching on Zoom the next day. Mm-hmm. Like I'm processing everything and like, what did I just go through? Like, who am I? What's going on? I don't know. At this point, I'd stopped seeing a counselor because I just felt like I'd hit a kind of a dead end with the counselor I was going to. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not in therapy. I don't have anyone to process with. I'm not seeing anyone besides April. And so I would say the next week or two, you were definitely pretty distant from me. You know, I think it was hard for you to I don't know, be close to me after it. Like, I felt distant because there wasn't as much touching or hugging or holding hands or sitting with each other on the couch. It was kind of like you were trying to be cool and not say anything bad, but you were definitely more emotionally and physically removed from me.
Yeah, well, I think it was me trying to figure out how I felt about it. And I think part of the distance was because I didn't like it, but I didn't feel comfortable telling you that I didn't like it because I didn't want to hurt your feelings.
And you had no one to talk to, and I had no one to talk to.
Yeah, I didn't have anyone to talk to. But then also trying to figure out, like, I was just processing, and it took me a while. And I know that, like, one of the things that really bothered you were, like, there'd be some times where we would have sex and I would, like, disassociate and not be part of it. But you would take that personally, especially if it was right after I saw you in something femme. And so probably me not wanting to touch you was so that we wouldn't be having sex or be intimate in a time where I wasn't fully, like, where I wasn't able to be fully present.
Yeah.
Because it was hard for me to, like, unsee the images of you being feminine. And I, at the time, was like, I think I'm unattracted to this. And I didn't know why or how. And so it was just a challenge.
Yeah, and for me, that night was wonderful in a lot of ways, but it hurt my marriage for the next week or two. And that was something that even in conversation you would bring up. Like, this isn't, like, I know you did this, but this wasn't good for our marriage. And it was very hard for me to put myself above our marriage.
Right.
And so I remember thinking, like, okay. And then I remember immediately, I feel like after this, being like, when's the next green light night? Can I have another one? Mm-hmm. And you were like, okay, yeah, let's do it in 5 or 6 weeks. So you put something on the calendar. And I will say that helped a little bit because it was just something to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just something to look forward to.
Well, and I also noticed too, if I gave in and, like, let, not that I let you, but was, like, cool with you doing something more femme, then you also treated me better, like, in the days to come. Yeah. Like, almost like as a thank you, I guess.
Well, I was just all happy. I was happy. You know, yeah. I was happier. So we were kind of having a hard time avoiding each other.
One of the things I did, speaking of disassociating, I downloaded this app called TikTok.
Yes.
During this time, like around April, I guess, and April of 2020, and started posting like silly mom videos. But then I made one video that went kind of viral, pretty almost 1 million views, which is pretty viral for TikTok. And basically the whole gist was, when you're a Christian who doesn't like Trump, you get kicked out of the club. And it was based on this TikTok trend that, you know, it doesn't really matter. But that was the message.
It was so simple. April had done these elaborate skits and sketches, and it got a few thousand views. She did this one. So simple. Just if you're a Christian who doesn't like Trump, you're kicked out of the club. That's the gist of the entire thing.
That was the gist of the whole thing. But it was with the trend. And it was my very first Trump political video that I had ever done, and it got almost 1 million views, and there were thousands of comments on there. I mean, I got a lot of hate too, but I was so surprised at how many people were like, oh my gosh, same, like, I love Jesus and I do not understand what's going on with this, like, obsession with Trump and the church. And so I started building this, like, online little deconstruction community during this time.
Well, it was so healthy. It was healthy for you because, as we talked about in a previous episode, up until this point, we're asking ourselves, are we crazy? Why are we not loving Trump and worshiping him? Are we crazy? Are we crazy? And then you finally get connected to all these other people that are all feeling the same way. And you're like, we're not totally crazy.
No, we're, like, not the ones.
Like, we're not. Like, there's others out there that feel the exact same way. They're alienated. And so I think it was a really... Yeah.
And I do think being on TikTok, like, I would say I was leaning towards being affirming, but I don't think I had said out loud that I was affirming by this point. But I was, like, pro-LGBTQ, but, like, quietly. But TikTok actually helped me because I started getting served, like, a bunch of LGBTQ videos and, like, affirming Christians and affirming clergy. And so it helped me build my theology around why I was affirming. So that definitely helped me eventually be more accepting of Beecher. But one thing that is notable during that summer of 2020 that, like, kind of consumed our lives for a couple months was George Floyd was murdered. Mm-hmm. And that started a bunch of Black Lives Matter protests happening all around the country. And one started locally where we live. And we live in a pretty small town, but we have a very large Confederate statue that is, like, the biggest piece that is in our downtown area. And someone started a petition to move it to a museum. And there's, like, the museum is 1 mile away, so it's not far at all. And we weren't even trying to destroy it. This area went 77% for Trump, so we knew, like, Like, moving it to a museum is a good compromise. So we thought. And so I started going to these protests. And the local people lost their minds over the idea that we would move this statue to a museum. They were calling us Marxists and Antichrists and sheep and leftists.
And they were also doing a lot of things in the name of Christianity on the other side. I watch the girls most nights because, once again, pandemic, you're not going to have a babysitter come in. So I'm watching the kids. April's going out and doing it, but I did join her a few times. And yeah, I mean, the other side is invoking the name of Jesus and preaching that the color of sin is black.
Yeah, no, a local preacher preached a whole sermon at our side, which we had Black Lives Matter signs and like move the statue and all this stuff. And there were definitely a good mix of like people of color and white people on our side. And a preacher locally just preached at us. The whole sermon was wrapped around how the color of sin is black. Mm-hmm. He's preaching that two people holding Black Lives Matter signs, and there were black people standing with us. It was so insensitive. And there were worship pastors that would show up to defend the Confederate statue. Mm-hmm. And I would see these people just say the most racist, just unloving things. And like my sign said Black Lives Matter to Jesus. And I remember I took a picture of my 1-year-old at the time holding it because I just thought she was so cute. And so many people got so mad. People like that I know in my life from church that said, how dare I let my daughter hold an Antichrist sign that said Black Lives Matter to Jesus. So that just furthered the divide between us and evangelicals. Like, I still would have called myself an evangelical because I didn't know what else to do because I still love Jesus. But yeah, going through those protests, and I started recording some of the racist stuff. Yeah. And that's kind of when I started going really viral on TikTok, because I would just literally film these people being racist. And then they would get mad that I was posted videos of them, which I didn't even say anything. And so BuzzFeed actually picked up some of my footage and interviewed me. And after that, I actually got death threats. And so we were actually kind of scared for our family there for a little while.
So many of the pushback was from religious people. And so we're going, wait a minute, how can this religion that we claim to be a part of embrace this awful person for president and then turn around and yell slurs at black people? Mm-hmm. Like, wait a minute. Jesus ran around with the marginalized.
Right.
He ran around with those that are outcasts of the societies. He didn't celebrate with the kings.
Right.
So wait a minute. How are you doing that in the name of Christianity? And it definitely caused a lot more of like, okay, so they're wrong politically. Mm-hmm. They're wrong.
They're racist.
They're racist. Yeah. Like how do we separate it?
Well, and this was also like we both, but especially me, like I started getting books on racism and I started watching documentaries and I was like, that was kind of, like, I knew a lot of my history had been taught to me in a very whitewashed way, but this was when I was like, no, I need to know the truth. And so I went through specifically, like, church history and just realizing how much of modern evangelicalism is rooted in white supremacy was also just super eye-opening for me, too. And when I started being more anti-evangelical.
I would say this summer is a season where you wanted to know more and you wanted to learn and you really took it upon yourself. And that's watching TikToks, that's connecting with other creators, that's reading books on racism and anti-racism. Mm-hmm. And like you were willing to learn. And I think that kind of leads well into kind of us, like where we hit, because for me, so April's going to protest every night and that's more of her thing, although I'm still supportive and I would have been there every night if I didn't have to watch the kids, but
yeah,
it was more of April's things and she connected with a great community. I'm still pretty siloed, pretty alone. And I'm working on a screenplay during this season. And this screenplay was called Of Dusk and Marsh. And it is about a pastor. Well, the first draft, I've done 12 drafts of it. So it's a feature screenplay, full-length film. In this screenplay, the very first draft, it's about an evangelical pastor who confesses to the congregation that he struggles with cross-dressing, which, once again, in my life, I do not consider what I do cross-dressing. I'm non-binary. There's no clothes that are crossing any sort of clothing dressing line. But back then, I thought I dealt with cross-dressing. And so it was all about a pastor who confesses that and then kind of loses everything. And really what it was a therapeutic it was a way that I, especially not in counseling, said, okay, what if I was just honest with everybody? What's the worst that could happen? And I wrote out all these different reactions from church people and from their wife and from this and from that and then their loss of power. And it really kind of helped me process, because as I've talked about earlier, writing, especially screenplays and making films, is how I process and cope and survive. And so I really dove into my writing during this season because, once again, I have more time. I'm at home. I finished a draft of it, and it's super vulnerable. It's one of those screenplays that I think, you know, isn't necessarily one that, once again, I've done 12 drafts. This was an early draft, but I have a friend who's a director of photography out in Los Angeles who's really talented, and he'd worked with me on other films, and I sent him a draft of it because he used to be a Christian and is gay and been in a serious relationship for a while and lives in LA, but I really respect him professionally. So I sent him the screenplay, wanted his thoughts on the screenplay. So he calls me, and I think he's going to talk to me about the film, and all he can talk about is me. He's like, Beecher, where did this come from? Are you okay? Like, because it is such a sad, depressing, really difficult struggle. Screenplay. Mm-hmm. And the conversation lasted for an hour and a half, and it was so much about me, and he was just saying things that I really needed to hear but were hard to hear, such as, you can't live your life for other people. You're making your decisions based on what other people want of you, not what you want. Do you know what you want? And that's the reality, is that he brought to the forefront that I don't know what I want. And he then said something that was so pivotal but also almost soul-crushing. He says, well, if you come to LA, I would celebrate you no matter what you wore, no matter who you are, and I will totally affirm, and we can go out, and you can go out and femme. And so hearing someone, a trusted friend, say basically the opposite of what I was hearing from April at this time, as far as verbally, is that, you know, we will accept you, we will love you unconditionally, you can be whoever you are out here. It was great to hear, but it was also terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. I had no response. I remember being on the phone when he said that, like, well, you want to come out here and you can go out and film and we'll go out and hang out. I just like froze because I didn't know what I wanted. It was so scary. And so afterwards I went back and told April about the conversation, and I spiraled. I spiraled really, really, really low. It hit about 3 days in June. This is June of the pandemic. 3 days that I didn't sleep very much, that I was crying on and off pretty much all day long. And I quit eating. And I told myself, I have no desire to eat. I have no desire to get out of bed. I couldn't process the idea that there was a world in which I could be myself and people would be okay with it. And the idea of it being out there caused this almost mental breakdown, because I didn't want to leave April. I didn't want to leave the kids, but I also didn't want to stay, because I was like, this world is, I'm suffocating here.
Yeah.
And there I can breathe. And so I turned it into a fast. I remember telling, because you're like, Beecher, you need to eat. I was like, no, I'm going to do a fast. Like, I really need direction. And so I fasted for 3 days, like didn't only just drink liquids. And at the end of the third day, I was praying and actually making dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And the oven.
And we were talking. About this.
Yes, about this. And praying, asking for a sign and if I'd heard anything or seen anything. And the oven, out of nowhere, goes, oh!
What made such a gross, weird, loud monster noise.
And we both look at the oven. We're like, what was that? And the oven wouldn't turn on.
It just broke.
We have no idea to this day what really happened, but oven just broke, right? And so I really, when I'm fasting, even today, I think if I'm on a fast or really in a time of prayer and looking, I do look for signs. And I was like, okay, God, what does this mean? Like, the oven just stopped working. And I talked with April. I was like, what should we do? And we were like, okay, well, I guess we've got to get someone in here who knows ovens, who can tell us if this is broken, tell us if we need a new one, tell us if we can fix it, tell us what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I realized in that moment, and April did too, that I was the oven, mm-hmm. that I was broken, and that what you do with things that are broken is you find out what's wrong, but from people who know what they're talking about. Because up until this point, I'd seen two therapists in the previous, 8 years, and both of them were like general handymen. Neither of them specialized in trans people. Neither had any other trans clients. It was just me.
Neither of them, I don't know that even would have categorized you as a trans person.
Exactly.
At the time.
Yeah. But so it's basically like, okay, the oven's broke. Let's get a general handyman in.
And I remember we talked to and we decided like we can no longer be afraid to ask like what this is.
Yeah.
And we can no longer just be afraid to ask because we're scared of what the answer was, which I think was what kept us from genuinely like figuring it out for so long. But like we both were like, okay, well, you go find someone that specializes in trans issues. That's a counselor that can help you. And let's ask the question. And knowing that whatever the answer is of what this is, we have full control of what we do with that information. But we need to know.
Right. Because the oven isn't working. If the oven specialist comes in and says, we need a new oven, we don't have to get a new oven. And if we do, we get to pick which kind. We get to figure it out. But we have to know. And so we both took that as kind of a sign. And so that night, I literally got on the computer and was like, okay, we prayed. I don't know if you remember this. We prayed before we got on the computer. I was like, God, we want a Christian. We want someone that's close. Because at the time, I liked the idea of it being someone in the area and that specialized in gender identity.
Yeah.
And I typed it in, and like the first counselor that popped up was in Chattanooga, which is just down the road from us. And it was everything. And so I booked an appointment with her, and it was like 3 weeks before I could actually see her. So, but I will say those 3 weeks, I started eating again, started sleeping a little more, wasn't crying as much because I had hope. I was like, I'm going to go to someone who has answers. And of course it's the pandemic. So the first session with her, and her name's Courtney, I'm going to use her real name just because she was so vital in this next chapter of my life. It's just simpler to keep up with. But yeah, I met with Courtney in July, and that's when I started, you know, finding some healing, because she was someone that didn't just say, oh, Beecher, you're not alone. I'm sure there's other people like you. No, she was like, hey, 80% of my clients deal with gender identity. This is a story from one of them. And this is this is this. And she knew what the questions to ask. And she would tell me like, it's okay. You're on a journey. We'll figure this out together. And that was huge to talk to someone who knew. And I was scared, of course, but it was great. It was when I started to finally kind of find myself. And I remember like, this is probably a month after I started seeing Courtney. I had another green light night, and this time I put on like a tank top, and we looked at pictures. That's why we know about this, but I put on a tank top. I put on mascara, and I still had like a boyish haircut, even though I was growing it out some. And I remember taking selfies with my phone that night, and I got so, April, it was the green light night, but you were willing to actually sit and watch a movie with me. I don't know if you remember this, but you're so willing to sit and watch a movie. You're waiting on the couch like, Beecher, what's taking so long? And I thought I was going to take a quick picture. I took so many pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking like, this is why people take selfies. Like I've never, until that moment, I never understood why people took selfies. You can go through the previous 28 years of my life and you will not find a single selfie. And if anyone did, I thought they were conceited because I remember
you told me that. I take a selfie if I got a new hairstyle, which I wasn't like the biggest selfie person, but yeah.
But in high school and college, when we went back and look at old photos, you definitely took a lot of selfies. And I remember being very, and I was very judgmental. Looking back, the reason I was judgmental is because I didn't like who I was. And I was mad that you liked who you were and that you took your picture. So I'm going to write it off to, she's conceited, I'm humble, I'm right, she's wrong. But in that moment, I remember telling you, I was like, this is the first time that I've ever enjoyed taking a picture of myself. It was the first time, maybe ever, that I enjoyed looking myself in the mirror. Because until this point, as we kind of talked about, I didn't look in the mirror. I didn't pay attention to that because I didn't like who I was. And the pandemic took all these social constructs away. And it was me looking into the mirror so frequently. And now was the first moment I kind of liked what I saw back.
Yeah, which freaked me out.
Absolutely. But the green light night again was followed with April on the night trying to be chill and cool. And then the next week or two being more emotionally and physically distant.
I wanted to be supportive so bad. Like I knew that I wasn't fully supportive, and I hated that about me because I wanted to. And so like I would, like we were starting to talk about it a lot more because I was getting a little more comfortable with talking about it, and it was not like I couldn't avoid it anymore.
Also the pandemic, we have nowhere else to go, nothing else to do.
We were stuck. So we were talking about it more, but like I would still be somewhat honest with you. But I like pulled my punches with like kind of what I was really thinking, but I would still say it. And then I would feel bad that I wasn't supportive. And so I would like I remember it was like around September of 2020. I like randomly just bought you a dress out. I don't even know where it was from, but I just came home and it was a gift for no reason. I was like, here's a gift, a dress of your own.
Yeah. It was just this blue, I still have it, blue, pretty like basic, sleeveless dress from Target, kind of like a long tank top t-shirt. It was like a tank top
dress, yeah.
But I loved it. I was, and that was just so wonderful when you gave it to me. And once again, though, we've talked about previous episodes, I would think trajectory. Like, it's all great from here, and she's supportive, and then of course you'd pull back, and then...
Yeah, it would be kind of like, at this point, like for a while there, it would be, you know, one step forward, two steps back. Yeah. And then it kind of got a little even. We'd be like one step forward, one step back. And then I feel like around here was when I started going three steps forward, two steps back. So I was still not going fully forward, but I was gaining ground finally.
I think this is a good time to talk about something really important. And I think we can even like... This will be a good solid section, but this will probably be the last section of the episode.
Yeah.
What were your hangups at this time? Because you were wanting to be cool, but you, you weren't. And and because I remember this is where we really started talking about things, because you bought me a dress and I'm like, yes, you're affirming, you're wonderful. And then you'd pull back and freak out. And I'd be like, what is going on? And you were finally, I think, able to start engaging with it. So tell me, what were the areas that you were stuck on to not be there fully to celebrate me?
Yeah.
At this point?
So these are the three things that we, through talking about it, which we talked about it all the time, were my problems with it. One was just the theology and whether or not this would send you or us to hell if it was a sin or not.
And where did those thoughts come from?
Probably my evangelical upbringing, you know, boys are boys and girls are girls and you don't cross dress and you don't do this. And
I think too, just the idea of every little thing you do is part of a spiritual warfare. So even if it doesn't send us to hell, like what are we letting in the house if I put on that blue dress?
Right. There was a piece of me that was like, is this like, are we under demonic influence? Is that like what's leading us this way? Or is this being led by the Spirit? Like, you know, the Holy Spirit. But every time I would really think about that, I have definitely sensed, like, not to sound all wooey, but I have sensed the presence of evil and like dark forces in my life. And every time I would actually think about like what essence this was giving off, it was good. Like, it didn't feel evil. But because I was so afraid of hell and afraid of sin, because I know that would be what like all my Christian, you know, distant relatives or church people that I knew, that would be the first thing that they would bring up. So that was like in the back of my head.
But I do remember, and I don't remember where this conversation fell because we talked about it so much. There was a season, there was a moment that you said, Beecher, I see how happy this is making you, but look at all the bad things going on in our lives. It was one night. This was not a consistent thought you had, but it was a very hard conversation for me to hear. Because you said, I know you're happy and it's good fruit coming in your life. But, you know, the world shut down because of the pandemic. I have a close family member that was diagnosed with cancer. We were going through a difficult season with these external things. And because of our Christian mind, we couldn't justify why God would allow bad things to happen because they were happening around us. And so then...
I just want to clarify, I did not think that Beecher's gender dysphoria caused the pandemic.
Yeah, but it's true. Continue. But you did say, though, right, the world is breaking around us.
Right.
Family relationships, sickness, just a number of things.
Right. And I wasn't fully convinced that this would be good for our marriage either.
Right.
Because I was still kind of, I didn't see where it helped me.
Right. Because I will say, at this point, I did not feel like you were caught up on the hell aspect. I think you were more caught up on the spiritual warfare. What is this letting in? And because you wore a dress, are we going to get in a car accident the next day? That mindset of like bad physical things happening to us because of the things we're doing privately.
Well, and that probably stems from like, you know, believing that that God didn't heal my dad because I had premarital sex.
Right. But ultimately what it also stems to is that we didn't have a good reason for why bad things happen. So you look for things to blame it on.
Right. I haven't fully deconstructed that. So yes, that was definitely part of that.
What were other things that caught, that held you up?
The other thing was a very pragmatic reason was just, could I still be attracted to you?
Right.
As you got more and more feminine, which it wasn't like most days you still presented more mask and or more masculine, but it was starting to get where like I couldn't get the image of you being feminine out of my mind, which was probably just my mind playing tricks on me. But I didn't know if I could be attracted to it. But like even when we would talk about it, like I wanted to still be able to have sex with you. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if like the more and more that you dressed femme, if that would have like a long-term negative effect on how I physically was attracted to you.
And I remember after a green light night, when I'd say, why are you so distant? Why are we not being intimate? Why this? Why that? And I remember you saying, like, it's just really hard because I'm not attracted to that. And I kind of like, you'd get close to me, at least what you told me, you'd get close to me even if I was presenting mask, but you'd remember the feminine image of me. Mm-hmm. And that would make you kind of be repulsed and pull away.
Yeah.
And so I felt that. April wasn't saying the things most of the time to me, but she was pulling away and it was really difficult. And it was very confusing for me because in this season, you know, I'm figuring things out. This is very much like I'm still seeing Courtney during this summer, fall season. I am going, I'm asking questions like, am I a trans woman? Do I want to take mm-hmm. hormones? Am I a man that just likes women's clothes? Is this just a kink? Is this? Is this right. this? And I'm figuring this stuff out with Courtney, but I'm also telling April about it. And so April's working through her stuff. And then was there a third thing that kept you?
Yes, the third thing, I probably weighted this one too much than I should have, but it was what other people thought. I was really terrified of all my like conservative family and the people that I grew up with in church that, you know, listened to my dad speak. And like, I knew they already didn't like me because at this point I'm speaking out pretty regularly against Trump and doing funny things that are politically against Republicanism. But like, I in my head, I thought once, if they were to find out that Beecher is trans in some way or has gender dysphoria or just like likes wearing women's clothes, like they're gonna feel justified in calling me a Jezebel or calling me a heretic, like, and then like I lose any influence that I have, which I realized like anytime we would talk it through, I knew that it was illogical to feel this way because these people already don't like the people that would not like us because of this probably already don't. But I also grew up and I was a preacher's kid, so I think you like your whole being is kind of based on what other people think. Like you want to present like this good Christian, whether you are or not, which I mean, I definitely was a good Christian growing up. I believe I still am. But yeah, so.
And I mean, for me hearing that, that was by far the most frustrating.
Yeah.
One of the three, because I'm going like, no, this, my friend in LA would celebrate me. No, my counselor says there's other people like me, mm-hmm. that she's willing to celebrate me. Like, why am I going to remain to stay miserable for these people that already hate us and think we're heretics because we're holding Black Lives Matter signs? You know, why are we letting these people influence whether or not I'm perceived a certain way? And that one, I will say, just about every time we really talked about it, April got to the point at the end. She's like, yeah, that one holds weight, but it shouldn't hold as much weight, and I'm going to work on it.
Yeah, because I would realize, like, I don't actually care what these people think, because they've lost, to me, lost all credibility when they started worshiping Trump. So, you know, it was just this constant balance of... Also, I think where we live played a part into it, too, mm-hmm. because I was like, if we do go down this path and Beecher starts presenting more femme more regularly... Like, we live in a very conservative area, and so we got death threats just for doing the Black Lives Matter protest.
We had a Joe Biden sign in our yard. It got vandalized 6 times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because this is, like, election time. So I was just like, gosh, if just voting for Biden is getting our yard vandalized, like, what are they going to do when they see, like, Beecher in a dress?
Yeah.
You know, like, it was very fear-based. Like, all of my hang-ups in hindsight were fear-based. And I remember telling you too, which I'm sure we'll get into more details in the next episode, but I remember telling you that I got to a point where I didn't actually think there was anything wrong with you wearing women's clothes or with you like identifying however you were. And I told you too that like I like, and that was the struggle because I was affirming, but I had trouble with Beecher.
I will say the hell sin theological aspect was the first.
That one was the first to go away
because
yeah.
of. Not necessarily because of anything we did, but because of all the external factors that were already making us deconstruct and ask certain questions
right.
about the
religion. Like, I knew I was fully affirming of LGBTQ issues. And so, like, it took me a while to figure out why I was so hung up on why I couldn't just fully be affirming of Beecher. And that just came back to, like, it was just because we were married. Because I would tell you, like, hey, if you were just my roommate or my best friend, like, I would fully support this. It was the...
And that was tough to hear.
Yeah, because I wanted that intimacy, and I was just, it was all fear. I understand,
but that line right there, you used to say that to me a lot, and I remember thinking, so I'm being punished because I married you. I would, you know, it was a difficult line to hear.
But it was true, though, because I was like, if this was anyone else, it'd be fully supportive, but, well, and also I think there were also fears of, like, if you were to go down this path, if I could not be attracted, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean we separate? Does that mean we are roommates? Like, what does that do to our kids?
And so, I will say that, once again, April overcame really all three of these. And we've talked about some of those ways right now. But we're going to get into that even more because that's what so many people are asking. So we've hit on a very long topic that we will definitely pick up next episode. So just to recap where we're leaving off this episode... In our story, the pandemic is still full swing.
Full swing.
I now have a therapist who is really helping me figure out my identity. I've still not figured out my identity. I've been given some room to explore. Also, April is doing a lot of self research and research on Christianity and theology and all the things we've been taught to believe. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a ton of research on myself, trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
And in next episode, we will get to very quickly. Kind of next is that I realized I'm non-binary, which I'll talk about how I came to that conclusion, your initial response, and then several more highs and lows.
Yeah. And I'll go into like details of how I undid all of those hangups too.
Yeah, absolutely. But thank you all so much for listening to this episode of The Non-Binary Marriage. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. We would love if you would take the time to leave us a review or a 5-star rating wherever you listen. And if you need to get a hold of us, you can email us at nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com or individually on TikTok or Instagram at April A. Joy or at Hello Beecher. Stay tuned for new episodes coming out weekly. Thanks again for listening.